Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us once again. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and on the line here with me, I have James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. James.
Patrick, how are you, sir?
How's it going, man? How's your lime and coconut doing?
It's doing well.
I'm glad to hear that. Just worried about it. Oh, well, actually, before we get too far in the broadcast, I just wanted to...
I put the lime in the coconut. I mix it all up. I put the lime in the coconut. I drink it all down.
That was special for you.
I didn't realize I was going to take off the way it did. You know, when it happened, I was kind of like, that's weird. But then it became like
a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it became a legitimate thing. Oh, man. You know, I was sitting there watching Friday Night Fights with my daughter, who, for whatever reason, wasn't walking away this time. And that happened. And I almost just kind of like, I just like pretended like it didn't happen. I just moved on with my life, kept going, you know, and I was like, okay, fine. And then the fight started or whatever happened, and I was like, whatever, you know. And then a couple hours later, I saw somebody had uploaded it to Vine, and I watched it, and I was just like, oh, no, I can't believe this. It was like I found out somebody in my family died or something. I was like, oh, Jesus. My wife's like, what happened? And I show her, and her eyes got about as wide as dinner plates. When she watched it, she was like, that happened?
Yeah, it was...
It was good stuff.
And further evidence that, like, yeah, I prefer my commentators to be entertaining rather than informative.
Yeah, needless to say. I mean, yeah, that was... I don't know, that was pretty entertaining. That was pretty entertaining.
Damn,
I can't say that much, but... Ay. Well, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that happened this last week. Just like I pretty much say that every week. I feel like I say that pretty much every week. A lot of stuff happened this past week, but it was true. A lot of stuff did happen this past week, stuff that's worth talking about anyway. But first and foremost, our good buddy, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., he's back, James. He's totally back, fully back, ready to knock motherfuckers out.
Yep. He vacated his title at 173 and is, you know, apparently now campaigning in the super middleweight division.
Also known as, I think it's medium light heavyweight, medium middleweight, yeah. Something like that. I don't know. Who knows? How would you rate that performance by Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. on Saturday against Brian Vera?
I mean, I think overall, you know, it was good. I mean, it was a lot like the first fight. He, you know, took a lot of punches. It's just this time he kind of was a little bit more active and more accurate. And, yeah, it would have been, I guess, nice if he had just gone in there and blown Vera away, but I don't think that really happens, you know, much. Vera's a really tough guy, obviously. He could take, you know, incredible punch. So, overall, I mean, I think he kind of, you know, proved what I think had been questioned from the first fight, which was, you know, whether he still, you know, was capable of even being a professional, making a weight, you know, keeping his word as far as that goes. And, you know, he made 168, and he went in there and I think showed that he is just the better fighter against Brian Vera. I mean, he's not going to be the better fighter, I think, when he moves up and fights the elite, you know, best fighters in the division, whatever division that he ends up in. But I think that, you know, it's the rematch served its purpose. You know, I think he kind of, you know, redeemed. I don't think anyone's walking away from that thinking like, oh, we need a third fight, even though people had thought that Vera won the first one. You know, I think that this showed that, you know, in shape, focused, you know, more active Chavez is just a better fighter than Brian Vera.
You know, I don't want to get down on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in the wake of a win. I mean, he won, and he won deservedly. He won pretty convincingly. But, you know, I'm pretty sure I said this on Twitter, and I know I said it in a Facebook group, that I think that this fight showed that this is probably what should have happened the first fight. Yeah. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is simply just a better fighter, you know, and it's no disrespect to Brian Vera, but he's just not really an elite guy. And I think that it said a lot about what was going on with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. going up to that fight, or maybe what wasn't going on with him, that he basically lost that fight. So, you know, I do have to kind of give him props because he won, and he rightfully won, but I'm not totally convinced that he's quote unquote back, or that he's motivated, or whatever it is that he needs to be a top fighter. I don't know.
Well, I think that, you know, after the Martinez fight, which now was like 2 years ago, you know, it showed that at least he could, you know, hang in there and do something against somebody who was kind of at the top of the pecking order, you know. And after a year off, after not seeing him for so long and taking that suspension and everything, when the first Vera fight was announced, I mean, I think that it wasn't exactly like everyone was like, well, finally, the matchup we've all been waiting for. You know, I mean, a lot of people looked at it as like a tune-up, and that Vera, you know, for all as tough as he is and as you know, and it was a great fight on Saturday, too. I mean, it was really, you know, entertaining for a one-sided fight. But, you know, nobody was looking at Vera as, like, a real credible contender at any weight class. And he was also the smaller man against Chavez. So when the fight was, you know, the first fight was made, I don't think anybody was, like, terribly excited at it. And it was looked at as kind of a tune-up against an opponent that he should beat pretty handily. You know, if he's even able to go 12 rounds with, you know, Sergio and make the stand that he did, I mean, and, you know, knock out guys like Andy Lee, Brian Vera wasn't really, like, you know, a step forward or necessarily even sideways. So, you know, the first fight was supposed to be just kind of like he's been gone for a year, he's a little rusty, let's get him back in there and get him a W and get him, you know, back toward the bigger fights. But just because the combination of him being out of shape and I think Vera just really fighting the fight of his life and being possessed and, you know, walking through everything that Chavez threw and in most people's eyes winning, you know, it created this kind of demand for a rematch and, you know, set this up that now we're talking about Chavez like, oh, you know, Chavez just, you know, he redeemed himself from the first fight and he won the fight against Vera. But really, what does it all mean? You know, I mean, it was, you know, this whole series shouldn't necessarily even ever happened. You know, if Chavez had his shit together, if he hadn't been suspended for weed, who knows? You know, if he could make 160, maybe they would have done the rematch with Martinez, you know, 6 months after the first fight. And, you know, Chavez would be fighting the top guys in his division. So he definitely just kind of derailed himself with all that stuff and, you know, sidetracked his career for 2 years. And because of the first fight, you know, he had unfinished business with Vera. But I think now, finally, you know, it looks like at least he's back on the track he was on after the first Martinez fight, which is, you know, nobody thinks he's going to be able to be competitive, really, or beat, I shouldn't say competitive, but nobody thinks he's going to beat the best guys in those classes like Golovkin or Andre Ward. But he, you know, is not like an illegitimate opponent for any of those guys, you know. I mean, I think he's right there in the mix with, you know, the guys who you would want to see those guys fight. Maybe not Andre Ward, but, I mean, I think Golovkin, because of the size thing, I think that he poses an interesting, you know, challenge for him and compares favorably to Golovkin's recent opponent.
I mean, that especially the 12th round of that Sergio Martinez fight was great stuff. You know, that was really compelling television. That's what it was. But I do have to say that I did kind of have a second thought about it. I mean, I'd already thought about this angle, but it was just kind of brought up to me again by our pal John Monaghan, who listens to Linus ESQ on Twitter.
Yeah. I
thought
you might be referring to his comments, because I saw him on there too, and I kind of – go ahead, though.
Well, he had kind of put it in perspective where he was saying, look, you know, he lost 11 rounds against Sergio Martinez. I mean, that 12th round was great, but he lost 11 rounds against Sergio Martinez. And any other middleweight loses 11 rounds against Sergio Martinez and loses the fight, that's not a good fight. That's not, you know, I mean, the 12th round was great, but so I do think that it kind of deserves, you know, a bit of a, you know, a little bit more of an inspection in that regard, but that doesn't mean it was a bad fight or anything like that. Still, the storyline kind of from here, at least even in terms of what Bob Arum is saying, and Bob Arum has been one of the biggest champions, Junior, needless to say, but Bob Arum's saying, look, he needs a new trainer. He needs a new trainer, and he needs to learn another way of approaching fights, because just coming forward and banging and then like this occasional little, you know, BS defensive show isn't going to work. And I agree with him. I'm not 100% sure the new trainer would do anything, but I would say that I think something has to change with him in order to be an elite fighter. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And I just real quick want to go back to like Linus's comments, because I too thought that they were worthwhile, because he also had said something. I mean, I agree with that. You know, of course, nobody's saying like Chavez is like right behind the Sergio Martinez he fought 2 years ago, or right there with like a real elite world level fighter. But the thing is, like, we had seen Sergio against other so-called top middleweight contenders, and I mean, he knocked most of them out. Matthew Macklin, as you know, much we've talked about all the mythology with that, like, oh, Macklin was troubling him in the first few rounds. You know, I was at that fight, and I thought by the fourth or fifth round, Sergio took over and was basically just toying with Macklin, and of course eventually stopped him, you know, and he knocked out Darren Barker. And I mean, those are the guys that were saying, like, Macklin will be Golovkin's biggest test. You know, Darren Barker just beat Daniel Gill, and everybody's saying that, Gill should be one of Golovkin's, like, main challengers at middleweight. Well, Chavez did better than those guys did against Martinez. Even though if he did lose the first 11 rounds, even if he did take the beating, you know, he didn't get knocked out, and he actually, with the last minute of that fight, the whole thing was in jeopardy. I mean, he gave himself a chance to win. So I think he compared favorably with the other guys who fought Sergio. The other point that, you know, Linus made that I did think was more relevant was he basically was saying, you know, he thinks Junior is a circus and he doesn't like circuses. And I respect that, but, you know, I mean, I do kind of like that element of boxing, that you know, Junior is a circus. I mean, he is, you know, he's one of those fighters. He's always going to have, from, you know, his pre-fight antics to, you know, the way he acts in the ring, the clowning, all that stuff. I mean, he is one of those guys who, outside of just, you know, he's not like just like a quiet professional who goes about his business. I mean, maybe it's because of his father, because of the way he was brought up, but, you know, we saw on 24/7 that, you know, he's an interesting character who kind of, you know, goes to the beat of his own drummer, and he may be like a, you know, spoiled, entitled kid or whatever, I don't know, but, you know, when he gets in the ring, I think he's really entertaining. And, you know, to your point, yeah, I mean, it looks like he basically, like, again, like, he just kind of, like, trained himself. And I do think Junior's, that, like, in the last couple fights, it has looked like he's basically just kind of, like, just does what he does, you know, does what he does in the build up to the fight, and then just shows up in the ring and just kind of figures that he'll just be able to, like, overpower these guys, and he'll just be better than those guys. And the only really, I mean, look, even against Martinez, when, you know, I mean, we can all remember the 24/7 there, where it's like Chavez Sr. is like drawing up all these game plans, and he's like doing all these, like, you know, strategizing and watching tape of Martinez and all this stuff, and Junior's floating in the pool. And then he later tested positive for marijuana, you know. So it's like, biggest fight of his life, he didn't appear to take it that seriously. But at least he had Freddie in his corner during the fight, who was, I think, somewhat, you know, instrumental in, like, getting him to, you know, at least just motivating him to make that 12th-round comeback or whatever. I mean, so, yeah, I agree with you, man. I mean, of course he needs to take it all more seriously, and at the very least, just have some kind of a trainer, you know. I don't think it would be a bad idea for him to hook up with, even though I'm not a huge fan, but just somebody like Robert Garcia, you know, somebody who just is used to, you know, having professional fighters at a very high level, like, in their corner, and, you know, and being involved in, like, high-level fights. I mean, he's not going to be able to just show up in the ring against Golovkin and just kind of figure that he can kind of just wing it once he gets there. You know, if he's going to be competitive on a high level, you know, he needs to make those changes.
Well, I did kind of disagree with part of what our buddy Linus was saying, in that, you know, I think that the way he was saying it was like he was suggesting that Junior's not a real fighter, you know, that he's just kind of a fabrication. And I think he's a real fighter. I think that he's proven that in the last couple of years. I think that he kind of was a bit of a pretender, you know, in the first few years where he was, you know, he's on pay-per-view undercards, and you know, they're having special top-ranked pay-per-views just for him and stuff like that. You know, that was not cool. But now I think he's proven that he's here and he's a fighter and he's going to fight. Just the level of dedication is what, you know, that's kind of what's being called into question, rightfully. But as far as Golovkin goes, what do you think? Because I'm actually a little split. It seems to me like the perception is Golovkin would wreck him. And I think that that's probably, one, the popular thing to say, but also, two, you know, yeah, I guess it kind of is leaning that way, especially considering Junior's half-assed dedication. But I'm also kind of worried that, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. would come in and basically just out-big Gennady Golovkin. And I mean, I said it on Twitter, I wouldn't want to see that fight if it was like that, because I like Golovkin, number one, but two, I wouldn't want to see a fight like that. But what do you think?
Yeah, but I don't think we're really talking about, you know, like Chavez Jr. versus like Mikey Garcia or something like that. I mean, Golovkin's a big dude. You know, you saw against Curtis Stevens. I mean, he was much bigger than Curtis Stevens. He looks to me like he's like a decent size middleweight. And, you know, that's just how boxing goes. I mean, if Chavez can make the weight, then he gets to fight in that division, you know, and he makes 168. But I don't see him being that much bigger than Golovkin. I think that, you know, I think that it's weird. You know, that is kind of the assumption, because we've been told how great Golovkin is, that, you know, Golovkin would just destroy Chavez Jr. But at the same time, you know, I mean, has Golovkin ever fought anyone with that type of, like, first of all, with that kind of a chin? No. You know, with that type of bravado, with that kind of arrogance that most great fighters have, you know, that Chavez Jr. definitely has? No. You know, and Jr. can punch, too. So, and Jr.'s been involved in a really high-level fight, you know, with the experience with Martinez. I don't think he's going to be intimidated by somebody like Golovkin. And you're right, he will have the size advantage. So, I mean, all of that together, yeah, of course I'm going to, you know, join the bandwagon and say that I think Golovkin wins that fight, and probably by some kind of an accumulation like TKO. But I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think there's definitely a possibility. You know, Curtis Stevens tried to stand and you know, fight back, but a lot of his opponents haven't really done that. And I think Chavez will, and I think Chavez is a bigger puncher than, you know, anybody he's fought. You know, even though Stevens is a knockout artist, he hadn't really fought anybody. You know, he hadn't really fought a high level of competition. And, you know, I just think Junior on paper is as good of an opponent as Golovkin will have fought, especially if you know, and I think it would happen at 168, where he gets that extra weight advantage.
Yeah, there's no way Junior's going to 160. I mean, I guess in some theory there could be, but in reality, no way, right?
No, and I think he'd have to make Golovkin come to 68, because, I mean, I think Junior still probably, you know, Golovkin needs a name, right? I mean, and Chavez is a way bigger name than anybody else in that division, and probably including Golovkin, even though Golovkin's gotten a little bit more notoriety, and I do think that Chavez, you know, has squandered his popularity a little bit. I still think he's a bigger name, and I think the fight would probably be done on his terms. You know, I mean, if you're Golovkin and you believe, like everyone else, that you're in a different class than Chavez, you're begging for that fight. If they're going to put it on pay-per-view and give you your career-high payday, so I think you know, I can't imagine Golovkin's side trying to, like, you know, negotiate a catch weight or something. I mean, they said themselves, hey, we'll fight anyone from 54 to 68. I mean, Chavez Jr. is not that much of a, you know, not where, like, we're saying, okay, fight Andre Ward, you know, tomorrow. I mean, I think Chavez Jr. is a reasonable foe that he could, you know, go up and, but, I don't know. I don't see Chavez Jr. cutting weight unless he's getting like a Mayweather fight or something.
And how pissy would that make Andre Ward if they fought next? Because who would that leave Andre Ward? I would laugh just because Andre Ward seems kind of like a douche, and I would kind of laugh at that. But still, if in terms of, you know, being about it being the best super middleweight in the world with really nobody legitimate to fight.
It'd be like the biggest money fight in his division has nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be funny, because it's not like you could really say, like, yeah, but it's also funny because it's not like you could say, like, Ward deserves that fight. Like, which side of it? I mean, it's not like it's, like, the fight for the championship at 68. It's not, like, the number one contender at 68. It's just two guys just agreeing, you know, who happen, like, kind of just happen to be fighting in his division. But, yeah, I'm sure it would make him, you know, jealous. But, hey, the other thing is with that, you know, I noticed over the weekend, I think just another example of, like, how laughable the Alphabet's belts are, with Arthur Abraham beating Stiglitz. So now Andre Ward has wins over all three of the other title holders in his division.
Was that? Oh, yeah, that was for a belt. That was for, like, the IBF belt or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Which I'm sure that's happened. I mean, that's happened before, because a lot of times when guys win, you know, one of the titles goes vacant, and then it's, like, the same guy that they beat ends up with it. But it's just kind of funny where you can call Arthur Abraham.
Well, that's,
you know,
what happened to Frotch, too.
Yeah, Frotch has one. I think Frotch has a belt, and Abraham has a belt, and Saki Obika has a belt. So those guys are the, quote, champions. But yet Andre Ward's beaten all three. And, of course, he's regarded as a, you know, universal champ or whatever. But, I mean, just the people who mock that system of, like, ranking guys based on, you know, who actually fights and who beats who. I mean, it's just, I think it's just funny that how can you call those guys champions when they've each lost to the other guy in their division who has the belt. I don't know.
Well, I mean, now that we're talking about it, I, for whatever reason, just realized that we don't really talk about the whole sanctioning body versus lineal versus whatever thing on the show a whole lot. I mean, first of all, the talk's been kind of done to death, and we talk about this shit pretty much every time it comes up. You know, anytime there's some belt that two guys shouldn't be fighting for or something like that, we talk about it. But, you know, it's so convoluted and so stupid, especially in a division like 168 pounds where Andre Ward is very, 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 very clearly proven to be the best super middleweight out there. Yet there's other belts floating around because sanctioned bodies are like, take the belt away because he didn't fight so-and-so, or he's injured, so we're giving the regular belt to this guy and we'll just elevate you to champion fuckitus or whatever it is, you know. It's stupid. So, yeah, I mean, I think that I'm still not totally on board necessarily with an organization like the Transnational Boxing Ratings Board, but I'm not on board not because I don't agree with it or anything like that, but just because I'm wary of anything like that at this point because of the sanctioning bodies. But still, I think
especially the snakes,
there's those
guys that have involved it. You know, the founders. I mean, they're all pretty. You know, like that Tim Starks guy. I mean, I wouldn't trust anything that he's.
Oh, no, I think they're mostly bloggers.
But, yeah, they're bloggers. Very disreputable.
No,
but
we don't.
No, I mean, like, and this is the whole thing, is, like, you can have a reasonable approach to it and just say, you know, like, dude, we're both like, yeah, I'd love to see Triple G against Chavez Jr. That'd be awesome. At 168, sweet. Like, who gives a fuck? It's a great fight. There's no belts on the line. And I'm not over here crying, like, Andre Ward should get a shot at one of those guys because he's the champion. Like, no, it's just a great fight. Two guys want to fight. If that happens, I'll be all about that. But at the same time, you know, for people to say, like, you shouldn't even, I mean, because, like, there's an argument that's kind of like, fuck rankings. Like, you shouldn't even keep track of, like, who's the lineal champion. That term's meaningless. And that's what pisses me off. Like, I don't care if you want to, like, sit down and, like, rank everybody in every division or whatever, but just at least acknowledge, like, those guys who have achieved that so for the groups that do say, like, this man is the legit champion, I mean, that's a good thing because, like, a guy like Andre Ward, he has earned it by beating those guys in the ring. You know, and it's important to, like, just make the distinction between that and between an alphabet holder, where someone like Arthur Abraham is the champion at super middleweight, and there's people who use, like, I wouldn't call him a champion, but there people would use that word. I mean, fuck, if you watch that NBC
HBO,
sports show,
HBO would
Penny
call
Rice
it,
is calling everybody a fucking champion.
Well, if he's on HBO, they're going to be calling it a championship fight.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's when, if it's on TV, especially American TV, they're going to be going, this is for the super middleweight world championship. You know, they use those kind of, you know, somewhat ambiguous terms like that so that the bout that they're about to show sounds more important.
Yeah. Well, it's only in boxing that the term champion just means, like, anybody who
one of a whole bunch of different guys.
Yeah, it's usually, like, a singular thing. One champion per, you know, other sports, like, one per year or one per, you know, event or whatever, but...
Yeah, well, it's like there's only one Super Bowl winner. You know, you're
that's
not going
right.
to be, like, there aren't multiple, you know, NFL world champions or baseball, you know, there's only one. But this is boxing.
But screw rankings. But, no, you know, it's like... The other thing is, like, most of the time, if you look at, like, the best fights of the last, like, however long, they often have involved, like, the number one versus number two in a certain division.
Well, at the end of the day, we want to know who's the best in from fight to fight and over long-term stretches. We want to know who's the best. I don't really see what's crazy about that. I mean, and on top of that, if we want to figure out who's best, but it's not 1,000% clear, I don't really want a sanctioning organization that makes money off of the things that they do, you know, telling me over maybe an organization that doesn't or something. But, I mean, there's arguments.
Yeah, I mean,
needless to say,
the belts
still.
Definitely create, like, opportunities for fighters, but it's just, like, it's just not, like, really, like, a fair system. So I don't know why you would defend that when, you know, but.
Well, whatever.
Because you hear that argument all the time. Like, okay, for example, like when Ishae Smith like had that title, was did he get a? Yeah, I think he won that belt, and then he was like, he got that fight with Carlos Molina and probably made good money in those two. And people were saying, you know, Ishae never would have had those opportunities without, you know, that belt. And it's like, okay, he's a nice guy. Like, that's good for him. I'm happy that he had those opportunities. But, you know, like, who's to say there's not a more deserving fighter, that another guy who didn't get that opportunity, you know? So it's like, just because it helped one guy, I mean, if we just had, like, one system, I'm sorry, but it would just be better for everyone involved. You know, and I think it would give every fight, like, higher stakes as you're building toward one champion. I know it's not, like, inclusive. You know, it's not like a, this share, you know, we're, like, not kindergarten. Like, everybody gets a gold star, you know, but, like, that's just the way that sports should be run, you know?
Yeah. There's, well, there just should be one belt.
And that's not even getting into one all the champion. Corruption and shit that, like, the belts have, you know, all the alphabets have had a history of. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, we should have Rick Glaser on to talk. No, never mind.
Yeah, I'm good on that one. Real good. Really good on that one. Oh, well, speaking of no balls, Vasyl Lomachenko got his punch to oblivion by Orlando Salido in the co-feature of that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Brian Vera card on HBO. Yeah, it was a little excessive. Not gonna lie to you. I like Orlando Salido. Who doesn't like Orlando Salido? Really? I mean, he's a tough ass guy. You know. Well, maybe people really don't. But
prior to Saturday,
you know, he's a really tough dude. He came up the tough way. He has a lot of losses. You know, if you look at his record, it might not really look like much. And I think he's kind of easy to like. However, on Saturday night, he really punched the fuck out of Vasyl Lomachenko's nuts and hips. I mean, it was tough, man. And I got to give Jim Lampley serious credit for calling out Lawrence Cole, who I believe I mentioned before as an abomination of a referee. I'll go ahead and repeat that now. He's a fucking abomination of a referee. I don't know why he keeps getting high-profile fights. Well, no, I do know why, but his dad is the chairman of the Texas Athletic Commission or whatever, and that's why he keeps getting them. But serious shit, stop putting them in there. As far as the fight goes, what did you think about Vasyl Lomachenko, James?
I think that, you know, overall I was pretty impressed with him, to be honest. I mean, because I didn't expect, like, who was that dude who was saying he thought that Lomachenko was going to knock out Salido? Oh, yeah, that was Brian Campbell, but our boy. and I understand, like, where you guys were coming from, because, I mean, I think the fight showed, like, Lomachenko, I mean, on top of, like, all those disadvantages that he faced in the ring, which was, I think, getting a very unsympathetic, you know, ref who wasn't, you know, doing anything to stop the low blows that Salido was throwing. Salido's weight advantage. Although I would say that, you know, when he tapped that, like, 147 or whatever, the crazy number that he showed on the HBO on official scale. I mean, you remember that when Matisse weighed in at, like, 162 or something at a 140-pound fight, and everyone was like, what the fuck? And then it turned out, like, he's on the unofficial scale wearing, like, jeans and a belt and shoes and, you know. So I don't know how accurate, like, we can really say for sure that he was, like, you know, genuinely, like, 12 pounds heavier than Lomachenko. I mean, I think he's definitely rehydrated. But, and that I think that sucked, you know, that he couldn't make the weight. I think that did kind of taint it. But all that stuff aside, you know, I still think Lomachenko, like, it's hard not to be impressed with the guy in his second pro fight. I mean, he was taking such a huge step up against somebody who'd fought, you know, really good fighters, like the best in the featherweight division at the time, you know, and fighting Gamboa and Juanma and Mikey Garcia, you know. And Salido is just tough as nails, you know, and he can take a punch and was going to keep coming. And it just seemed like such a bad, like, this wasn't a guy I would have looked at and said, like, oh, he seems vulnerable. You know, I think he's a good candidate for Lomachenko's second pro fight. I mean, Salido seems like the exact wrong kind of guy to you know, test a fighter like that, as good of an amateur as he was. You know, there is some kind of, you know, developmental ladder as a pro, and I think that's obvious. But all that said, I mean, he still came within, like, what, a round or two of winning the fight. And I think that, you know, to do that, and at the end of the fight, having Salido hurt and on the verge of a knockout, and maybe with, like, a little bit more experience, and also, you know, Lawrence Cole kind of fucked up that sequence, too, by jumping in there and, you know, breaking them up when, and, you know, really buying Salido a few extra seconds. So who knows? But, you know, everything, I mean, I can't come away from that and be like, oh, Lomachenko was exposed, you know, what a hype job. Like, no, I mean, he fought a really tough fight.
It was the second fight, you know?
Yes, exactly, or whatever. You know, even if you count those pro fights, you know, even if you count those, I mean, this was just a huge step up, and the guys like fought like seven pro fights, and you know, I thought overall, I mean, to come away and lose a split decision like that, which I think it probably should have been a unanimous. I mean, I thought it was a clear Salido win, but to lose like a close decision like that, and have the guy hurt and reeling in the 12th round and really come on strong to finish the show, there's no shame. I mean, I'd love to see him back, and I think he can be, you know, really come back and become like a major player in that weight division. You know, and he, I think he can come back and become a really good pro. You know, I just thought like I was really impressed with him and Salido. You know, he had been a fan favorite. I mean, I thought it was awesome what he did to Wanma. I thought those both fights were great. And he is just such, you know, like you said, like a hardworking guy who really kind of earned his place, kept coming and, you know, winning those fights and, you know, to kind of defied the odds. And, you know, even in his losses, he gave tough, you know, I thought he gave Gamboa a really tough fight. And against Mikey, you know, he never quit. He was down four times. He didn't quit. You know, Mikey basically stopped it when he was, you know, was up so huge with the head, after the headbutt. But Salido was right there, ready to roll, you know. And so it's hard not to like that guy, but. You know, honestly, he did erase a lot of the goodwill because, you know, missing the weight by that much. And, you know, if I'm him and I'm going to get on that HBO unofficial scale, I mean, I'm basically going to strip, like, butt naked because, you know, that didn't look great to be like, you know, he's 150 in the ring tonight or whatever it was.
And he,
you know?
And
so,
he also,
so,
yeah,
I mean,
he kind of just walked away like he was like, didn't make it, whatever.
I can't believe
like
he really stepped,
you know,
on the scale, like, you know, in his boxing trunks and weighed 148. I mean, I feel like he had to have had, like, 5 pounds of clothes on. But, you know, whatever. It just, that didn't look good. And then, you know, the way that he fought, I mean, the low blows and all that stuff, I didn't like it, but it's hard for me to give Salido that hard of a time just on that, based on, like, the way that fight was refereed and everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do what the ref lets you get away with, more or less, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I never saw him really, like, maliciously punch him, like, right in the nuts, I guess, where I thought, like, wow, that was, like, blatantly, like, intentional. Most of it, to me, looked kind of like they were in the, you know, clinches, and he was, you know, but, I mean, you know, he was consistently going low, and he needed to be warned. But beyond that, I mean, I think a lot of it was just kind of the way that those styles clashed. Like, he was trying to go low, and he kept hitting him on the hip, you know. But I think, you know, I've never seen Salido really get dirty like that before. So I got to imagine maybe it was just some combination of the way that they were clinching and the way he was holding. I mean, his head was down, and he was trying to shoot, you know. He does kind of throw those, like, low kind of, like, uppercuts, and, you know, maybe just was missing the mark. I don't know. But, I mean, I can't look at that and say, like, Salido was intentionally being dirty. I look at it more like I thought Lawrence Cole really screwed up in not, you know, noticing that pattern and stopping it and giving him a warning. So.
Yes, I agree with you on both counts for the most part, although some of the punches, some of the punches were just kind of on the lower belt line and not so much the actual taint, as it were. It was more, you know, like hip shots and stuff like that. However, those aren't legal. And Lawrence Cole should have been like, what are you doing? Or pulled him aside or, you know, covered up his microphone and said, you're ahead in the fight, so if you want to end it, go ahead and end it now. Like
yep.
He did to Juan Manuel Marquez. How a fucking guy can get a job after doing something like that is astounding. Anyway, our buddy Alex Berry, who we've had on the show previously, actually brought up a good point, which is he said he was astounded by how little Lomachenko complained during and after the fight, and I got to agree with him. I mean, I know that some of it is patriotism and some of it is like kind of favoritism because you like I love Mexican fighters, you know. My wife is Mexican. I'm, you know, by proxy a little bit Mexican, I guess. Not really, but anyway.
I love Mexican fighters, but I can't really come away from that fight going like, man, that Vasyl Lomachenko is a real shit, or that guy sucks, or that guy was exposed, or what a douchebag, or anything like that. Because, I mean, the guy, yeah, he basically got smacked around in a number of the rounds, and a lot of the strategy that was used in doing that was illegal. And he didn't complain a whole lot. He kind of looked at Lawrence Cole like, buddy, are you going to do something? And then when it became clear that Lawrence Cole was like, I have an IQ of 31, he was like, ah, well, fuck it, I'm still fighting. So pretty much, you know, I got to come away from that fight going like, this guy has some type of future. He has to. Maybe he won't be like the best champion ever or whatever, but I mean, I came away with respect for the guy. Second pro fight, seventh pro fight, whatever. That was Orlando Salido.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, most of the effective work that Salido was doing to actually win the rounds was legal, you know, legal body shots, and I thought the pressure he was putting on early. I mean, he just fought exactly the way you would think that, like, a veteran would fight in that situation against a guy who, and I think Lomachenko was a little reluctant to start that fight. You know, he wasn't throwing a whole lot. He was letting Salido win those rounds and build up a lead early. The low blows didn't help. I mean, they didn't help Lomachenko, you know. I mean, if anything, yeah, it was a part of the story, but I think Salido winning that fight was there was more involved than just that. I mean, I think the biggest thing was just that experience gap, and you know, it's not so much like, see, I'm not even going to look at that fight and say, like, the Chavez Vera, I look at that and I will say, you know, I think Chavez definitely proved he's just a better fighter. I don't look at Salido Lomachenko and say Salido proved he's a better fighter. I think that he won that fight, you know, in large part because of, like, he knew how to, you know, I think that Lomachenko was unprepared to take that big of a step up. I mean, going from fighting that guy, his debut, I think that guy's name was like Jose Ramirez. But, you know, no one had ever heard of Jose Ramirez. I mean, he'd fought, I forget exactly what his you know, resume was before Lomachenko, but clearly was, you know, levels beneath where Salido had been fighting, you know, and I mean, I just think that Lomachenko came in, maybe realized he was up against this, you know, tough dude who was a lot bigger than him, who was, you know, pressuring him, and you know, I think he got really tight early and gave away some rounds, but, you know, the way he ended that fight, I think there's, like, a lot to look forward to. And, you know, I'd welcome him back against, you know, against a lot of the guys we see on the on HBO at featherweight.
Well, we'll get back to Salido and just – well, I was going to say we'll get back to Salido in just a second, but, you know, because I don't want to, like, ignore him, because he did win the fight and he should be talked about because of that. However, as far as Lomachenko goes, what are there any adjustments off the top of your head that you can think of that he really needs to work on before expecting to get back in with, like, an upper level featherweight?
I don't know. Well, that's why I'm curious, like, what they plan to do. Are they going to, like, take him a notch back and, you know, build him back up? I mean, I think eventually wouldn't be a bad idea, I don't think, to rematch Salido, even if it has to happen at, like, 130 or at some, you know, 128 catch weight or something. But I think that what he showed in the last couple of rounds was that, like, he could have won that fight. You know, and I hate to say that. I mean, I guess every fight's different. Like, I wouldn't look at Chavez's stand against Sergio and say, like, Chavez could have won that fight, because I think there was other factors involved, you know. But the way Lomachenko took over last couple rounds, it made me think that, like, had he just been, like, a little bit more, you know, active early and maybe more, you know, I don't know, that he could have – that he had the tools to, like, beat a guy like Salido, and he kind of just let Salido impose his style on him. And then it was just too late. But I was really impressed that, you know, Lomachenko, I mean, at times during that fight early, I was thinking, like, man, like, Lomachenko might get stopped, you know, because it's just, you never have seen a guy take that, you know, who's stepping up that big, and then he's taking that kind of, you know, those type of shots. And I thought Salido hit him with some really big punches.
I thought he was going to be way in over his head in the first one or two rounds there. I was like, this ain't looking so good.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. But how did you score it?
I thought about 8-4 roughly was pretty good. I mean, I thought that Salido pretty clearly deserved to win the fight, but he didn't look real good late, and that might have been because of the weight issue. And I didn't really like the way that he, you know, didn't really seem to give a shit about not making weight. I mean,
I know that he's not a young dude. He was at featherweight for a long time, and I'm not trying to rail on him, but yeah, that was kind of low rent a little bit, and especially in hindsight, considering he won the fight and the way he won the fight, kind of muscling around, you know. But yeah, I thought that it was close enough that Lomachenko shouldn't be walking away from that fight going, oh my God, I got my ass kicked. You know, he should be walking away from that fight thinking, I kept it damn close with a world-class featherweight in my second or seventh or whatever pro fight. That's impressive any way you swing it.
Well, hey, let me ask you, what would you do if you were like Lomachenko's management or, you know, whoever makes those decisions and he came to you right away and said, hey, like, I think I can beat this guy. I want to do a rematch, an immediate rematch.
I don't know that I would want, I don't know that I would want Lomachenko getting immediately back in with Salido, like right now, just because I'm just not entirely sure what he could show in a rematch in his third or whatever pro fight that he didn't show in the first fight. I mean, obviously he could win, but a loss to Salido, a second loss to Salido in your first handful pro fights would be not good. And it would, I think, really damage his reputation, at least on this side of the pond. So I'm not entirely sure I would be wanting a rematch, especially not an immediate one for Lomachenko. But as far as, like, adjustments I would make, well, I would definitely say he needs to learn how to fight on the inside. You know, there was a lot of complaining about him clinching. I didn't really have a really huge issue with him clinching, considering the way that Salido was fighting inside. But it was excessive, and he needs to learn how to deal, like how to handle himself on the inside. Because from that mid-range and from a long range, he's very, very quick. He closes the distance quickly when he wants to, seems to have pretty good power. But inside, he was clueless. And he even admitted that in an interview. I can't remember where it was. The next morning, I read an interview, and he was like, I don't care what it is I have to do, but I have to learn something new because I got outfought. And I like that attitude. I think that's awesome. I think that's exactly what he needs to do. He needs to go back and whatever it is, get a new trainer, kick his dad out, whatever. He needs to learn some new tricks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, would you put him right back in with Salido?
I don't know. Probably. I mean, you're right. The smart move would be not to, but then it's like he's probably not going to get on HBO unless he fights somebody, you know, somebody decent.
Well, what do you think's next for Salido? Because, I mean, the guy can't have, you know, too many more years left in him, especially the way that he fights, the amount of punishment he's taken over the course of a career, et cetera.
Yeah.
What do you think's next for that guy?
Don't know. You know, I'm assuming he's going to move to 130. I mean, HBO has shown some of those fights. You know, trying to think, like Mikey, you know, Rocky Martinez. Mikey just fought. So, I mean, there might, you know, I don't know. I could see him kind of winding up doing something like that, getting into like an action, you know, a good action fight with another guy at 130 and winding up on one of the kind of top rank HBO undercards. I think that's probably what he would do. I don't know if he, you know, has ambitions to try to rematch Garcia, you know, but or, you know, just wait around. And at some point, I would think Lomachenko might want to, you know, avenge that as long as Salido's still active. So I think he'll have a couple fights, but I don't know. You know, 130 pounds, it seems like right now it's kind of like you know, in between division, like, you know, a lot of those guys, the big fights are going to happen at 135. I think Garcia is going to go up and get in the mix with like Terrence Crawford and Gamboa and the lightweights and, you know, featherweight. You've got Nonito Donaire and I don't know, maybe Donaire fights Salido.
Well, and it actually sounds like I was reading this morning and also in an interview like a few weeks ago, it sounded like Abner Mattes was on his way to 130 pounds for whatever reason. This morning I was reading that he might be fighting, Miura on, they're talking about putting him on the Mayweather Maidana undercard. And I'm like, why is he going to 130 pounds when he just got to featherweight? I mean, I don't want to start pulling out the V word, but I mean, really, it almost
well, dude,
seems
he's not ducking,
like he's ducking
Gonzalez, is he? I thought Gonzalez got injured, or was it Mahrez that got injured?
It was Mahrez who got injured.
Oh.
And so, I mean, I'm not, I rarely say stuff like that, but I mean, it kind of looks to me like that way. Anyway, I guess if he's going to be at 130, that could be a possibility. But wait,
no,
HBO and Showtime. Never mind.
Yeah, well, Salido's with like Zanfer, right, which does all the, which works with Top Rank.
Yeah.
So
never mind.
Probably won't be fighting Mahrez, but yeah, I don't know. I could see, you know, maybe Donaire moves up there and fights him. I mean, he'll be in the mix, you know, the win. I mean, he had to, you know, he's after getting knocked out by Garcia, or not knocked out, but getting beaten by Garcia, you know, and been in these last couple fights where it's like, you know, you have to win. He had to beat Orlando Cruz, who wasn't really highly regarded, and you know, I think if he would have lost to Lomachenko, you know, I mean, the story would have been how good Lomachenko is, but it definitely would have, you know, knocked Salido back into kind of more of like a, you know, gatekeeper type of guy. But, well, hey, now he won't have that belt anymore, so won't have that bargaining power. But,
well, I don't know where he goes from here, but, you know, I hope he's able to kind of bounce back a little bit, at least in terms of
reputation-wise, you mean?
Yeah, that was kind of rough.
Yeah, I just
but
think
anyway.
Missing weight by that much was really surprising.
Yeah, it was a downer for sure, and I just hate to see stuff like that happen. Like, Yoan Guzman versus Ali Funeca a few years ago when Guzman missed weight, and so only Funeca could win the title, and he came really damn close to doing it, and like, you know, kind of got a shitty shake from the refereeing, and I thought he won the fight personally, but then like he lost it on the cards, and it was like, I just hate to see a guy do things like that and get rewarded. You know, that just kind of sucks. I know that there are situations where a guy just can't make weight anymore, and I get that, but that doesn't mean I'm going to be cool with it. I thought it was pretty shitty. That said, the money team made an appearance on Showbox this past Friday. I think it was like 38% of the money team or something. I don't know. I didn't even do the math. I'm just approximating. But Badu Jack got knocked out in the first round. That was kind of cool.
Yeah,
did you even catch that shit, James? Because if you didn't, whatever.
No,
you didn't
miss
the whole time.
Kind of watching it, but I like, you know, now I can't even remember the image of Jack being knocked out. But I knew he got knocked out. So maybe I missed it, and then I don't think I recorded it. So I guess I didn't actually see that. But, yeah, I read that. And then who... That was kind of the
it
big story.
It was Jaylion Love.
Right? Oh, yeah, and then Jaylion Love in the main event.
Yeah, and what's his name? Chris Pearson, I think. Aside from Badu Jack getting knocked out by, what was his name? I think Derek Edwards was his name.
Yeah.
Derek Edwards. Aside from him getting knocked out, it was not a particularly entertaining card.
I did see that knockout.
He took a few right hands, like, and then he went down.
He got
up
knocked
a little
down
bit
and then
wobbly.
Got up right and then knocked down again.
Yeah, and then knocked down again and then got up real wobbly and then got stopped and was like, "What the hell? Why are you stopping me?" Like while he's like falling onto the friggin' like, you know, through the ring ropes and shit. Yeah, that was kind of fun, but other than that, no, it was whatever. I don't even really. Once again, I'll say this. This is one of my catchphrases, I guess. I don't really want to spend a lot of time on that card because it's not really worth spending time on. But I do think that it kind of is worth saying or worth asking. I mean, what is it? Why are they doing these types of shows? Are they seriously just like throwing Floyd Mayweather a bone? Like, hey, thanks for coming over to Showtime for us. So here you go. We'll give you 5 Showbox shows a year. Where you can just showcase all of your fighters against who the fuck ever. I mean, why do they do those?
You're saying Vladimir Bielsa wasn't a, great opponent for Jaylion Love?
Oh, no.
And then remind me again what happened in Jaylion Love's, like, biggest fight? Where he got, like, an undeserved decision against Rosado, and then it was expunged because of a positive steroid test.
You literally just summed it up better than I could have. That was exactly what happened.
So, yeah, so it's like, so why am I watching this guy on a main event, even on a Showbox? But he does have a cool name. The thing, Jaylion Love with the J apostrophe, you know, and Leon Love, I mean, that's a memorable name. So I think that is a big part of it's a big part of boxing is just, you know, sticking in your the recognition factor, you know.
Oh yeah. It is a porn
star. Oh, Jay Leon loves fighting. I've heard of that guy. But
it is definitely recognizable.
Well, that's the irony of it, I guess, if I'm using that term right, probably not, but that like the card was, you know, these cards are terrible because they are like, you know, just basically throwing TMT guys against like essentially like either like totally unknowns or like journeymen in what, you know, should be like mismatches, yet like Badu Jack did get knocked out in the first round. So, you know, like I guess you can't, it's hard to say like, well, the card wasn't competitive because like one of the guy, you know, prospects like did get knocked out, but it's like it shouldn't have been, and it kind of just makes, you know, it just kind of just means that, yeah, the whole thing pretty much sucked. And yeah, I don't know who it's too bad Jesse Vargas isn't still with the Mayweather Promotions, because I think he's still probably the best fighter of any of those dudes, and that's not really saying a whole lot, you know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Floyd's just a better, you know, a better fighter than he is as a talent scout.
I mean, I'm not saying
I respect any of these fighters
what he's
are
trying
bad,
to do
but,
with that. I mean, maybe, you know, eventually maybe he will get some good talent. I mean, eventually he could get some good talent. And it's not like all those guys are scrubs. I mean, he has some decent fighters. You're right. I mean, it doesn't appear to be. I don't know. You know, those guys don't appear to be any great. But, you know, Jay Leon Love held his own with Rosado. I mean, there's worse things in the world than that. You know, Rosado's decent.
For sure.
Enough.
No,
so,
I actually think Jay Leon's a pretty decent fighter. But,
yeah.
You know, it just showcases like these do nothing for me. You know, that's pretty much all it comes down to.
I agree. Well, that's what sucks about it. It goes against the spirit of showbox, because it's not supposed to be like A-side versus like unknown in a showcase. It's supposed to be like two prospects, you know, the same kind of caliber, where one guy comes out on top, you know, and that's the whole thing in boxing. That's all we want of any fights, you know, whether it's at the top of the divisions or, you know, on the way up. But there are these, you know, entities and enigmas who just are like, you know, we want it, you know, seem to favor the approach of just, you know, kind of constant mismatches. But you're right, it's not great. It's not great TV. But I don't think anyone, I don't know if those guys at Showtime like really care or what. You know, I'm sure it did its usual rating.
Well, now I have to ask. I mean, you watched Friday Night Fights live, right? I mean, this is the recurring joke. But did you get to see live and all that shit?
No, I had it on, and I also had on Showbox. Then I was started flipping back and forth between Showbox.
Ah.
Because there was, like, that fighter from Ghana, Ekbeko.
Yeah.
And I just felt so bad for the guy. I just couldn't watch it anymore.
Yeah, that was a little brutal. I didn't feel bad for the dude. But,
did no one watch tape on that guy beforehand?
Well, actually, what's his name? Jonathan Moreland, who's contributed a couple things to Queensbury Rules. He actually wrote an article on him, like maybe about a week before the fight. But but he wasn't very known or anything like that. It's not like, you know, everybody knew he was going to come in slapping.
Yeah, I know.
In any event, well, I was going to ask you, what do you think about this Boxino, like this kind of tournament format that they're doing on Friday Night Fights?
I like it. I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think it's exactly what, you know, something to kind of change up the format and make, you know, put a little bit more, you know, bigger stakes into it with these kind of fights amongst, you know, basically unknown fighters. Some of them are, you know, older and kind of journeymen, or some of them are, you know, guys looking for, like, you know, another shot, and some of them are young guys who just we haven't heard of, and or, you know, fighters, like, from foreign places, like Ghana, that, you know, and I guess, I think it's a good tournament, man. I mean, for, you know, it's made the last couple Friday Night Fights more watchable, you know, and it.
Well, it's going to be difficult to get higher profile guys for Friday Night Fights, period. And especially, I think, for a tournament like this that, like, there are, I don't know, I think it's just they're kind of short rounds, you know, you're kind of committing yourself over a slightly long term, stuff like that. It's going to be tough to get higher profile guys. However, I agree with you. I think that trying something new with this tournament format, or, well,
I guess the tournament idea isn't exactly new, but still, it, in this day and age, it doesn't really get done very often, at least not in the pros. I think trying something like that is, at the very least, thinking outside the box and showing that they're putting forth an effort to do something with boxing on ESPN, and I appreciate that. And it gives us opportunities to listen to Teddy Atlas do his thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the guys who win
magical.
These, I think, are going to have bigger names. Then obviously,
yeah, there
when
is
they,
light
when
name
they came
the
into
sure.
it, and then who knows, maybe they can match them against like a hot more, a bigger profile contender that, on like an ESPN Friday Night Fights, just like regular main event. But I think, it's good that they're trying something new. I mean, I think tournaments in boxing would be great. It's just that because there's no one, regulatory kind of body in charge of everything, that there's just so much risk with putting something like that together that, fighters going to drop out of the fight or get injured or, whatever. You can't really mandate it. But, I mean, that's kind of how, the championship, if they're in divisions where there's no champion, ideal world, I mean, that's exactly what you would do, is make, the top four guys fight each other, or top eight guys or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like the idea. I think it's good. It seems like it's gotten a really good response from boxing fans, too, on Twitter and stuff. So.
I like it. I like that they're trying. Because, all jokes aside, and yes, we joke about that shit constantly, but jokes aside, they do occasionally offer up some pretty decent fights. And shut the fuck up, Jimmy Tobin. I know you're listening to this. They do occasionally offer up some pretty good fights, even if the names aren't big. And I just, more boxing on TV for the most part, not always, but for the most part, I think is good. Just bringing itself into the consciousness of the public is good. So, yeah,
well,
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, man, and it's like, for boxing fans, love it. If boxing is your favorite sport and, you're, all about it, then it's great to have a show that's on every Friday night. You can, either watch it at home or record it and, watch it later. I mean, I've nothing against Friday Night Fights. I think it's great. It just kind
for
of
sure.
I missed you last season because there wasn't, the greatest matchups and then developed reputation of, not being down with it, but...
There are seriously people who, they don't even know who you are, but they're just be like, oh, yeah, the guy, your co-host that just doesn't listen to or doesn't watch Friday Night Fights. It's awesome. They know it now. I mean, I always forget to do this at the end of the show, so while it's on my mind, I'll do it now. Thank you to Josh Griffin, Alex Berry, Jonah Gregory, Jimmy Tobin, a whole bunch of you guys. Amanda Kelly, too, she's been listening. A whole bunch of folks that listen to our show regularly. We appreciate that stuff. Anyway, last week I wound up having to do the show solo. It wasn't the best show in the world. I was seriously, literally doing like three things at once. And when I went back and listened to it, I was like, ooh, that sounded horrible. But anyway, I talked about Floyd Mayweather announcing that he would be fighting Marcos Maidana. And seriously, it was tough to talk about that shit on my own, and I was sitting there craving some Foley input. So what do you think about that shit? Who's going to win? Was it the right fight to make?
Who's going to win?
Et cetera.
Come on.
I got to ask anyway.
Between the two candidates, I guess, and I love how they've somehow convinced the world, no, there are only two candidates, Amir Khan or Marcos Maidana. That's it. Suggest anyone else, and it's ridiculous. So between the two candidates, yeah, Maidana deserved the fight much more. Will he win? I don't know. Probably not. I'd say there's probably, 99% chance that Mayweather probably wins by decision. But the things I like about Maidana, before I get into what I like about him, I really wish that Maidana, Devin Alexander had never happened, because I would be much more down with this fight if that hadn't happened. I mean, seeing the dude just get completely shut out by Alexander, even if he was having the worst night of his life, if he's having irritable bowel syndrome in the ring or whatever it was, his issues he was having, to have let Devin just dance around him the entire night and just pick him apart like that. I mean, Devin Alexander, to win every single round of that fight and basically almost offer nothing in return does not really give you great hope against somebody with, as hands as quick as Mayweather, the impenetrable defense and everything that he's going to bring into the ring is just it could very well become. I mean, the expectation is that it will be like a lopsided decision for Mayweather, in which he basically barely gets troubled or tested or anything. Okay, but all that said, you know, Maidana, things I like about him, you can't question like the guy's toughness and you know, heart, you know, being able to get off the canvas and fight till the very final bell. And even in his losses, aside from the Alexander fight, you know, he gave Amir Khan, of course, like a really hard time and almost had him knocked out, although we've since seen that maybe Khan's chin is not, you know, the sturdiest thing. But I like Maidana's, like, I mean, I just like him as a dude and as a, you know, fighter. I mean, he's one of the most fun fighters to watch. It just seems like this is just a horrible matchup for him, because all of a sudden, you know, you're putting a high entertainment guy in with somebody who's just on another level as far as like actual boxing skill. And, you know, so I don't have high expectations for the fight, but I mean, I like Maidana, and I guess you could do, you know, the case to be made for him. I think you could do worse than having a guy who's not going to get discouraged and not going to give up, and I think probably will go out on his shield. But, you know, when I think about that Alexander fight, it's just like, because in that fight, I thought he really did end up getting discouraged and kind of just giving up and not doing all the things we love. I mean, he's redeemed himself. I mean, beating Broner and you know, beating Josecito Lopez and Soto Carras. I mean, he's been on a great run. And so I really hope that was just like an anomaly. And, you know, I just like the fact that I think, unlike, you know, Guerrero, who I thought kind of just became really discouraged and, you know, and I think Guerrero might even be more skilled than Maidana, but which is another horrible sign. But, you know, I think in terms of the attitude, I think Maidana will have the right attitude. You know, and if that's all you can say for him, I mean, that's more than you could say for a couple other Floyd's recent opponents. You know, I think he won't give up. He does seem like he, you know, has power. And, you know, if he's going to be charging forward all night and at least trying to make a fight of it, you know, it could, even if he's unsuccessful, it may, you know, lead to just a spectacular exhibition of boxing skill from Mayweather. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with it. I mean, I'd rather see other fights, but it's hard to argue that Maidana didn't deserve it compared to Amir Khan. Or, you know, even while I was kind of advocating for, like, Sean Porter or Keith Thurman, you know, just somebody who's undefeated, somebody like, you know, in terms of real deserved, like, who won the big fight in that division at Golden Boy that realistically could have happened, I mean, you can't argue that Maidana's win over Broner was the biggest thing there. I mean, Porter beat Alexander, who, you know, on paper and everything, probably was higher, you know, should have been higher ranked by than Broner at welterweight, but I don't know. And Porter, I think, would have more, you know, more potential dimensions to, like, trouble Mayweather, but, you know, the point is, like, winning that Broner, I mean, nobody picked Maidana against Broner. You know, he was a huge underdog, and Broner, you know, we'd all kind of thought that he was this special, you know, super talented fighter. Maidana really, really, you know, beat him up and won that fight, and so I'm happy, you know, have an opportunity, and I know he's going to have, you know, the perfect mindset for it. It's just, does he have the skill and the, you know, athletic abilities to do much? I don't think so.
I think that in terms of who should have gotten the fight between Marcos Maidana and Amir Khan, I think that if that's who it was between, then Floyd made the right choice. I just have to question, why exactly was it those two that it was between, when it seemed like there could have been a much wider array of opponents? But whatever. I will say, though, that ever since choosing Marcos Maidana, Amir Khan has been so butthurt about not getting the Floyd Mayweather fight that he's currently using a Ouija board constructed from the blood of all the emo bands on the face of the earth, and he's trying to contact the spirit of Kurt Cobain so he can ferment his tears and inject them. That's how butthurt he is about not getting that Floyd Mayweather fight. He's pretty butthurt.
Well, yeah, he's acting like he was, you know, betrayed and lied to and all this stuff. Like, he was promised to fight. And, well, maybe he was, but it's kind of too bad.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining to watch him freak out on social media about it. Like, that day before they officially announced Maidana, he's like, nope, I didn't want to go that fight anyway. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I did like how he kind of broke the news before it was official, basically told everybody that he was out. a couple days before Mayweather made, you know, officially made the pick. But, you know, like, I don't dislike Khan. I mean, I you know, honestly probably would, if in terms of the actual fight I had to watch, probably would rather watch Khan. Just because. Oh, sorry. Just because
no,
he's got the quicker hands and stuff, you know. But you can't possibly argue that Khan deserved the fight. I mean, his resume since Danny Garcia is just laughable. And you can't get knocked out like that by the guy at division beneath, go up to welterweight, not fight anybody, you know, struggle with a guy, another guy, Julio Diaz, not a welterweight, you know, former lightweight. You just can't do that and then argue that you deserve, like, the fight with the number one pound. You know, I mean, Maidana's enough of a stretch already. Khan would have just been preposterous. And then the same people who would argue, you know, had Floyd chosen him, you know, if you would say, what about Pacquiao? They would be like, he got knocked out. You know, he doesn't deserve the fight. Are you crazy? But Khan deserved the fight, and Maidana deserves the fight. You know, I mean, I think Maidana is probably, I probably regard him better than most. I'm not saying that he's not, like, I mean, I think he's a very, very good fighter. I don't think he's a completely unsophisticated, like, you know, like, just total, you know, brawler. But he is kind of crude, and he does seem like he throws wide punches, and, you know, his MO is kind of toughness and, you know, walking guys down. And the exact style, you know, he's not particularly fast. It's just the type of style that Floyd has feasted on before. You know, we know that he knows how to win these fights.
Yeah.
So I think it's missing a lot of the drama. I mean, if the only thing you can really sell it on is, like, Maidana's tough and he has heart and he has a big punch.
And he beat Adrian Broner, who's, you know, maybe Floyd will whip out he's the next best thing to me thing. I don't know. Who knows? Well, Floyd the other day had said, speaking of Amir Khan, he had said that he wanted Amir Khan to fight Adrian Broner on the Mayweather-Maidana undercard. Real quick, who would you like in that fight? I think that's a
would
really good
favor
fight.
To win.
Yeah,
I think that's a really tough call. I think I might favor Broner, because I just, you know, I have to see Khan look good again before I could really get behind him winning a fight against anybody who's even a decent top five, top ten guy in those divisions. You know, I mean, I liked Amir Khan a lot as a fighter when he was, you know, knocking out Zab Judah and even, you know, getting the win over Maidana when he got, you know, beaten up and hurt pretty badly in the late stages. I mean, I liked watching him coming along, and he had, a lot of tools, especially offensively, but I just couldn't pick him. I don't think I could pick him in a fight. I mean, we saw with, you know, Broner, you know, he got hurt really badly against Maidana, and he never gave up. And he was there for all 12 rounds, and he probably was doing most of his, you know, best work in the fight in the last few rounds. So it's just tough to pick a guy like Khan who's looked, you know, so vulnerable. And, I mean, I know Broner, you know, from the looks of it, didn't carry his power up from 35 to 47 because he went the distance with Paulie, and, you know, he didn't really hurt Maidana or anything.
With Khan, it might not matter. Yeah.
But, yeah, with Khan, I mean, if he's getting wobbled by Julio Diaz, it makes me think that Broner could probably hurt him too, and I think Broner showed a pretty tough chin to be able to even take those shots from Maidana and, you know, get up from them and survive.
That,
how about you? I don't
know.
That's a tough fight to call. I hope it – I mean,
I
but
think,
hey,
I
no,
agree.
But,
go ahead.
Why think Hello? About that when we can talk about the long-awaited Adrian Broner-John Molina fight that everyone's been buzzing about for years?
Yeah, for
did you read how
time?
That was gonna
no.
That was mentioned on the as an opener on the Mayweather card?
I read that it was mentioned as like the co-feature.
Yeah,
like
actually,
the, well,
I think you're
you
right.
know, whatever
yeah,
you want to call
right.
it, co-feature or like yeah, the fight that they show right before the main
fuck.
Event. I was like, huh? I mean, dude, I like John Molina. Nice kid, fun to watch sometimes when he throws punches, but. I mean, really, come on now, come on. They got to strengthen it with something better than that. I'd much rather see Amir Khan take on Broner because that's a fight that, I mean, you pretty much nailed it. I think that it's kind of tough to pick because it's basically comes down to Amir Khan, who has real quick hands and pretty decent power himself. I mean, he's just not very durable. He's vulnerable. He can't seem to take a very good punch. But then there's Adrian Broner, who I think would be at a serious skill disadvantage against Amir Khan. And, yeah, I mean, I think that that's kind of that fight has a potential for something real funky to happen. You know, some explosions. Pause.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, man. I mean, and Khan has always kind of seemed to me like a guy who's just fought in the, with the, you know, I think what happened against Bredis Prescott is kind of just like, okay, that kind of shit, like, just, it just happens. I mean, he doesn't have a good chin, and he just got caught, you know, cold in the first round, probably before he'd been warmed up. I wouldn't read that much into that. But against Maidana and against, like, against Danny Garcia, which was his downfall, and against, you know, against Julio Diaz, too, it's like, I think, don't think he fights in this style that really, you know, like, maximizes, like, his gifts, you know? I think that he could be a very good boxer, and he does have a little bit of power, you know, and he can hurt people, but he seems, he's just is way too eager when he takes a punch to just jump in there and start brawling, and he gets clipped, and he doesn't have the chin to stand up to it, you know? And against Garcia, I mean, I thought his, you know, Garcia timed him and hit him with a perfect punch, but the way he was, Khan was dominating those first couple rounds with just his speed and his length, and, you know, it just makes you think that if he was just a little bit smarter on defense, and that's why so many people were saying, making those comparisons to Klitschko, like, could Khan come back and possibly, like, reinvent himself like Klitschko? But Khan will never have those, the size advantages that Klitschko has to be able to kind of help protect himself, you know?
And he needs an inside game, too. We were just talking about this with Lomachenko. He needs to learn how to fight on the inside, and it, what, he's like, I think, 28 or something like that? He ain't going to learn that.
Yeah, and you wonder, again, with Virgil Hunter, it's like, you know, I do
Virgil
think Khan,
Hunter.
Yeah, like, what is he going to do? Dude, how powerful, not to get off subject, but, like, you, could you catch the All Access with Canelo Angulo?
I didn't get to watch all of it, no. I
Virgil Hunter
DVR,
basically
though.
Being, like, Alfredo Angulo's father?
No.
Figure? I mean, seriously.
Like George Michael status?
Yeah, no. But, you know. I don't know. I just don't know if that's the right style. I mean, I think Khan appears to have these gifts of, like, that he, because he's so fast, you know, that he could be a good just boxer, but, you know, maybe, you know, under Freddie, I mean, he was, like, really overwhelming a lot of guys with just his offensive firepower, and, you know, maybe that was the right approach for him. I don't know. But, you know, he's one of those people, I think he probably had all the skills where he could have been great. Maybe he always had a fatal flaw with his chin. But, you know, either way, I'm not betting that he'll ever get back to the top, you know, the top of the sport. And I think I'm glad that he didn't get the chance to get Mayweather. You know, even though I would have preferred the fight stylistically, but that's just not how it should work. You know, you shouldn't be able to get a big fight like that. If we're going to fight off names, then make Mayweather Pacquiao.
Yeah.
It's all about your name. I mean, and Khan's not even that big of a name, so it made no sense.
Yeah, I agree. But let me ask you a question. Did you catch the Terrence Crawford versus Ricky Burns fight yet?
Yeah, actually, I did watch that one.
Nice.
I did.
So, not to spend a whole shitload of time on it, because we still got to preview Canelo Angulo, but what did you think of Terrence Crawford? Are you sold on him being a top fighter?
Yeah, as far as being one of the top lightweights, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I was impressed. You know, I thought he, you know, easily handled Ricky Burns, didn't seem to get threatened much, you know, and I think Burns is a good fighter. I don't think Burns is really, like, a great fighter, and I think Crawford showed he's in a different class, and that's great, you know. I put him right up there at lightweight with, the, you know, Miguel Vasquez and Rashard Abreel and those guys, and I think, you know, he looks like he would be the most talented of any of those fighters. And the interesting thing is, I don't know if it's made yet or not, but I really hope that we do get the Uriorkis Gamboa against Mikey Garcia fight. You know, and if that goes to script and Mikey wins, then, you know, I think Mikey and Crawford is a fight that, you know, built up. I mean, that's a really nice fight for Top Rank to potentially make,
yeah,
because I think it's two really high skill young guys in their primes. You know, and could arguably be at some, you know, someday the number one, number two guys in those divisions, in that division, and you know, make a legitimate lightweight champ. You know, that's down the road, but yeah, I think Crawford's in a great, great position, and it was a, you know, great win for him.
Yeah, I got to see him, and I've brought it up before, but I got to see him against Bredis Prescott on the undercard of, I believe it was Alvarado Rios 2. And, you know, I mean, that wasn't exactly the type of performance where I was like, wow, this guy's future champion, you know. It was a solid performance, and it was kind of more of a he did what he had to do to win against a guy like that type of performance. You know, I remember Kevin Ioli having it like a draw or like Prescott winning by a point or two or something like that, because he tweeted it on Press Row. And I was just like, whoa. No. That's not the fight that happened. The fight that happened was Crawford, you know, got some experience against a guy he needed to be careful against, and he did it. That's what he did.
Yeah.
Against Burns, you know, he went to a guy's hometown and I thought basically gave him a lesson. You know, he basically just showed him exactly what boxing on a world-class level is all about, pretty much. I like Ricky Burns, but, yeah, he almost looked like he didn't belong in there in a lot of those rounds. And
definitely. And you remember Crawford fighting in pretty, you know, empty arenas, like in front of, you know, on the undercards. I mean, he wasn't involved in any, like, big – I mean, that I remember since seeing him on HBO, I don't, you know, it hasn't been at an event like he was in Glasgow over the weekend, you know. So I think it's a great experience.
Yeah.
Go on the road, on the home court. I can't nitpick, you know, his flaws and stuff. I mean, he basically shut Ricky Burns out, you know. So what I think they'll probably do is, you know, since Beltran, in most people's eyes, already has a win over Burns, and Beltran is fighting Rocky Martinez on that Pacquiao pay-per-view, I'm thinking that the winner of that, and, you know, probably Beltran, but who knows, will end up fighting Terrence Crawford. You know, and that seems like a good fight, because it'll be, you know, either both of those guys are kind of come-forward action guys, and it should give Crawford a chance to really, you know, kind of shine as a counterpuncher, building that eventual, I think, clash with whoever comes out of the Mikey and Gamboa side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Top Rank has a nice layout, nice plan there for the next...
Oh. Yeah, for sure. They do, yeah, and I kind of hope that that's what winds up happening. I mean, I can't really get behind Miguel Vasquez. He's a fine fighter and everything, but I don't really want to see him very much, and I don't really want to see a guy like Crawford potentially derailed by a style like that. I mean, I know that's kind of selfish and all, but I just don't really want to see it. But, I mean, seriously, I do have to say, though, for Terrence Bud Crawford, the dude's from Omaha, Nebraska. I mean, there can't – somebody called, like, the Pope and recommend canonization and shit, because you just can't be from Omaha, Nebraska, and have anybody to spar with that'll make you that good. You can't. There's nobody there. I mean, seriously, who is in Omaha that could make you a respectable fighter? There's nobody to fight. Peyton Manning, the ghost of Indian genocide. Like, that's it. That's all in Omaha. So that's I got to give respect to the dude, because he looks like he's making out to be a pretty good fighter, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think this – yeah, you can't doubt the guy deserves to be in the picture anymore. You know, I don't think he's an HBO creation. I mean, I think he's shown that in the last few fights. He's won the – you know, especially this one. I mean, forget about the phony belt, but he deserves to be in the picture. When you're talking about the best young fighters in that weight class, you know, at 135, 140, he's there.
Yeah, the type of performance he put forth
What I think is really interesting and telling is, like, you know, I think most people have already kind of come around to, you know, putting Mikey Garcia into that kind of elite class of fighter, even though he hasn't really, you know, been in against a prime elite opponent yet. And, you know, Gamboa could have been that a few years ago, but even against Gamboa, no one's going to regard, you know, Mikey's going to be a heavy favorite. But most people do seem to regard Mikey as a special fighter, and I think a lot of people would probably pick Crawford to beat him just on style. You know, he looks like a really good... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, he's not that I can think of ever really fought anybody quite like that. That's used that style and that has good speed and whatnot. I mean,
and size too.
So,
I mean, Crawford fought Brandis
size.
Prescott, who's a big junior lightweight. You know,
tall. So
anyway.
Yeah, I don't know that I would 1,000% be like, favor Crawford over Garcia quite yet. I think that there's still probably a little bit of a gap, like an experience, but it ain't that big. It's not so big that it couldn't be closed over the next, you know, 6 months to a year, a little bit. So, yeah. That's a fight that I would like. Definitely over Vasquez, anyway. Before it gets too late, dude, let's jump into Canelo Angulo. We've had some good discussion, but I just didn't realize it. We have like 40 minutes left in the show. Anyway, Canelo Angulo, what happens? What's going to happen?
I think Canelo's going to win the fight. I'd like to see Angulo just land one clean, you know, good shot and rock Canelo a little bit and see how he reacts. But I have a feeling that I think Canelo's going to kind of get it together and be able to outbox Angulo, use the movement, kind of be selective in his shots and just be a little more accurate in the punches and get a pretty clear decision win. That's my gut. I mean, I do think the knock on Angulo is, I mean, I think he's really kind of become a celebrated figure because what happened to him with getting, you know, being put into, like, the immigration, I mean, what exactly happened? I mean, I know he was incarcerated for, like, months. I don't, how long exactly was that? But
supposedly what happened was, and I mean, this is his side of the story, so I don't really know much past that, but supposedly what happened was he was supposed to have had his immigration status taken care of by, if I'm not mistaken, a former manager or promoter. And
the same
for
guy
whatever
who was supposed to, it was for the same guy who does Pacquiao's taxes. Go ahead.
You know what? It might have even been Gary Shaw. Nobody quote me because I don't know. I'd have to look this shit up. But anyway, well, everybody knows I hate Gary Shaw, so that would just work. But anyway, from his side of the story, he thought that his immigration stuff had been filed or taken care of. Turns out it wasn't. He wound up getting, you know, nabbed by the ICE agents and stuff like that and wound up getting put into, like, a detention center for, like, a year and a half and all this shit. And so that's when, like, when he got out, he had the long hair and the beard and looked all disheveled and stuff.
What was it, a year and a half he was in the detention center? I thought it was only, like,
it might have been, I don't know. I know that he was out for a long time. He might
anywhere
have, he
from
might not have
3 months
been,
to 2 years, but
it could have been 72 hours all the way to since he was 4 years old. I don't know. But in any event, he was there for a serious amount of time. Enough.
It was
to
a horrible, horrible,
anyway.
Horrible story what happened to him. And you know, I mean, we saw a little bit of him, if you weren't that familiar with his personality, on the All Access show with Canelo. And, you know, Angulo just seems like just a great, really nice guy, you know. And he's also an action fighter. I mean, the fight with James Kirkland was awesome. The fights, you know, he's not a bad fighter either. But he hasn't really, you know, won fights against the real, you know, the best fighters that he's fought. And that's kind of the one, I think, you know, drawback. I mean, I think he kind of boosted his stock in a loss to Arislandi Lara because he was able to be competitive and knocked him down twice, you know, and that. But ultimately here, I mean, I do think that Canelo is just probably just a little bit better. And I think that, you know, they're kind of cashing in on the fact that Angulo has had this resurgence and kind of become even more of a fan favorite because of, like, his backstory. And, you know, it's impossible not to root for somebody like him. And the, you know, the showing against Lara, who, you know, there's this kind of mythology that Canelo is ducking, everybody's ducking Lara, and he's the most avoided fighter in the whole sport, and he's like the second coming of Sugar Ray Robinson. And, you know, so, like, I think the fact that Angulo was the one man who, like, actually got to him and knocked him down twice, even though he ended up, you know, losing and was stopped because of what happened with the eye, and was probably behind on points anyway. You know, like, it's they've kind of been able to package him into this credible opponent for Canelo's comeback. And he does have, I mean, look, maybe I'm totally wrong, and he'll just walk Canelo down and catch him with a big punch and knock him out. I don't know. You know, that could happen. But based on the fights we've seen and kind of the caliber of opponents, and I know Canelo was shut out by Mayweather, but I just think, I think Angulo is probably going to come up short. I don't think it'll be a brawl like against James Kirkland. I don't think it's going to be as action-packed as even the Lara fight, but I do think that Canelo is going to find a way to probably pretty easily outbox him and do enough on points. And the intangibles, I think, also favor Canelo, you know, in terms of, like, the injury that Angulo had against Lara. I mean, I don't believe that you can be hit in that same spot and not re-aggravate that somehow, you know. And the fact that, like, you know, Canelo's young enough that he basically came out of the Mayweather fight, like, unscathed physically, as long as he can kind of and you know, it shouldn't be easy. It shouldn't be the type of loss that, like, destroys him, because he should be able to tell himself, like, hey, this guy's the best fighter in the world. You know, and he didn't really kick my ass. He just gave me a boxing lesson. So, I think everything is pointing to a big Canelo win. For me, I just can't go out on the limb and say that I you know, really believe that Angulo is going to, you know, hurt him. I mean, I always see these guys who predict fights who are so certain, you know, like they've seen some glitch of, like, you know, some fighter's defensive deficiency or something. And I know exactly, like, I'm telling you, like, Canelo's going to, you know, whatever. But, like, just looking on paper and looking at, like, who they've, you know, fought, and I think Canelo's had the experience in his last couple fights against Trout and Mayweather, and, you know, what is Angulo's, like, signature win? I mean, that's an important question here, I think.
Yeah, no, that is an important question, and on top of that, I think that you kind of just have to concede that there's a skills gap there and maybe just an overall class gap for sure. Although, you know, the bottom line is that fights that involve Alfredo Angulo are usually better than fights that do not involve Alfredo Angulo, for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that he's going to go in there and he's obviously going to try to do one thing, which is take Canelo's head off. That'll be good. That's good. And I do want to see him try that because kind of like in before Golovkin versus Stevens, when we previewed that, what I'd said was, I basically just want to see Stevens land a couple of big shots, you know, so that we can see what Golovkin can take. Does he have a decent chin? You know, what is he going to do when he gets hit hard? And that's, you know, same thing. I just want to see what happens when Alfredo Angulo plants his feet and is able to land like a huge hook or something like that. No, I'm not saying I want to see Canelo knocked out. I just want to see him tested. I want to see what happens when he's in there against a guy like this who might be able to pin him to the ropes and kick the crap out of him for a couple seconds. So I think that in that sense, this fight is important, and I do want to see it, and it's probably going to be pretty decent, if not very good. But, yeah, there's a gap there. And at the end of the day, I think that Canelo's probably just going to be a little bit too quick, you know, a little bit too have a little bit too much dexterity, stuff like that. But I don't know. I guess we'll see.
That's kind of my feeling. And, I also think Canelo is a decent puncher. I think that he'll be able to tag Angulo pretty easily. And, you know, that Angulo fight with Kirkland was just like, it was such a brutal, brutal, you know, beating for the last, like, four or five rounds. I mean, Angulo knocked him down in the first round and was just knocking Kirkland around the ring, and with about 90 seconds left in the first round, from there on out, I mean, it was just a sustained, prolonged, you know, beating for, like,
man,
six rounds.
So bad. Yeah, and
he just completely ran out of gas, and then he was just getting punched in the face hundreds of times until the fight was stopped.
He got pummeled.
Yeah, and at the time, I mean, I was pretty much like, Angulo's done, you know, at the highest level. And I think that was before he was detained. You know, so I think that was before he was in the detention center.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it may have done him well to just be away from out of the ring for that long, not like, obviously terrible circumstances, but, you know, the thing is, like, since then, I remember when he came back and he fought on, like, I forget what channel, it might have been like a Unimas or something, against Jorge Silva. I think that was the guy's name. But whoever, one of his first comeback fights against, like, you know, not a high level of opponent, and Angulo was basically like going life and death with him. And the only real, like, you know, positive showing he's had since then was against Lara, who I do think we may have, you know, I've been saying for a while, been saying for 2 years that Lara might be slightly overrated based on the performance, you know, against Paul Williams. I mean, that's kind of the entire reason why people seem to think that Lara is this, like, mystical, you know, amazing fighter. I mean, if I look on paper and I don't really see Lara's resume is not that impressive to me. I mean, I think he looks like a great boxer at times, but I also think he's just, you know, maddeningly inactive, and I don't really give fighters a lot of credit for wins like what he did to Austin Trout, which was just a completely dreary, you know, affair. I mean, yeah, he beat him great, but, you know, so I think on the comeback trail, I mean, I think we're you know, the fact that Lara is held in such esteem is what's also kind of, like, you know, catapulted Angulo back, that, like, he knocked Lara down twice, you know, he gave him a hell of a fight, and, like, oh, he might have won if his eye didn't get, like, you know, explode. you know, all the variables here, I mean, I just think that he's going to have a really tough time with Canelo, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if that injury gets re-aggravated and the fight ends up getting stopped with something, you know, some type of swelling in his eye or something like that.
Well, and good thing you brought that up, because I think that that has the potential to be a big factor in this fight. You know, it has the potential to be that I don't know. I have absolutely no idea how it's held up in training, what they're treating it like. You know, are they being extra careful with, you know, using the sparring headgear that has a little bridge across, you know, all that type of stuff? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But that was rough. I mean, that thing blew up real quick. It sounded like he fractured in his orbital, or if he didn't fracture it, there was obviously some significant injury to it. And, you know, seeing injuries like that happen, generally that's a bad thing. Generally that's the type of injury that comes back to haunt a fighter. And so, yeah, I'm kind of concerned about that for him.
Yeah, I think with good reason. I mean, I think most people will be rooting for Angulo. Most of the real hardcore boxing fans, you know, because, you know, it's another case of the fighter who had everything handed for, you know, basically the red carpet rolled out for Canelo to, you know, on the path to greatness, whereas Angulo, you know, even though he was an Olympian and he was pretty highly regarded himself, it wasn't quite the same, like, you know, superstar that Canelo was at such a young age, and, you know, has had to kind of, you know, fight some tough fighters along the way. But, you know, I just, the last few years, Angulo has not looked like he did at his very best. And even then, I think stylistically, you know, you got to favor the kind of more defensively responsible boxer and the guy who's basically, you know, in his very prime in Canelo. And I do hope that, like, you know, from Canelo's standpoint, I think it's important for him to come out and really win this emphatically to, like, send that message that, get that Mayweather fight behind him, and if he wants to kind of get back on that upward star trajectory. I mean, if they're asking us to pay $60, I mean, I can't believe this is on pay-per-view, but,
yeah,
you know, he's got to prove himself, and, you know, I think it'll be in a very interesting comparison. Here's another thing that I'm wondering with all the Lara, like, fanboys, is what happens if Canelo does, like, just cleanly outbox Angulo, never threatened, and wins a wide decision, or even, like, TKOs him. Then what is the storyline going to be, that, like, Lara actually wrecked Angulo and he was never the same? And I mean, I just wonder, you know? Like,
no, that's a good point.
I agree. Like, I'd love to see Canelo. I think Canelo should fight Lara. I mean, there's no question. I think Lara should be right in that mix, right there with Carlos Molina, and right at the top of that 154-pound division. I mean, I'd like to see Molina and Lara rematch. I'd like to see either one fight against Canelo. I think they'd both be really tough fights for him. But I just can't definitively look at one of those guys and pick out Lara and say he's the class of that, you know, that group. I don't think he's really that.
Well, you said that
of fights. You know?
You said something about red carpet. Was that a joke about Canelo being redhead?
No, I didn't think about that.
Just
but
making sure.
Should have.
Now, you know, just to be clear, I do like Lara, and I do want to see Lara fight Canelo. However, I'm definitely not under any illusion that Canelo is afraid or ducking him or anything like that. I think that it's more a case of, well, look at it this way. When Canelo fought Austin Trout, I think that they were basically, even Golden Boy was like, yeah, we don't really want this fight for him, but he insisted. He said he wanted the fight. And so I think that going in against a style like that, which is kind of a somewhat similar style to Lara, which is just perhaps not very entertaining.
The style of not throwing any punches?
Quick hands, good defense, and a difficult style to look good against. And he jumped right in against, against Austin Trout in that regard. So, yeah, I definitely don't think that he's afraid or ducking. I just think that that's a better version of, like, an Austin Trout style that I think would trouble him. But anyway, yeah, I agree.
The whole thing is the advantages
going in.
Let's say that they fought, and, like, so Canelo comes forward and, like, throws his combination, and then Lara, like, you know, pulls back and, like, lands, like, a really clean, like, straight left hand, and then he does, like, nothing for, like, 2.5 minutes, and then everybody's like, Lara's amazing, he's the greatest boxer I've ever seen. You know, I mean, like, you have to do more than that. I mean, I've always been on, like, I appreciate great boxing. I loved what Rigondeaux did against Daenerys, but, I mean, Lara, just, you know, it's just so frustrating to me to watch a guy who can beat, you know, land punches that accurate and that clean and really actually looks like he has some power too, but is just so inactive. You know, we'll not throw punches. We'll just take the smallest lead in the round and then coast to the, you know, to the bell. And I really don't let, you know, I can't, like, prop that guy as some great genius because, of course, like, when you throw punches, that creates risk and you open up to, you know, and we did see against Angulo that he can be hurt. And, you know, I would love to see him fight Canelo, and I think I would pick Canelo. And that's most of the reason why I want to see it is because I feel like everybody would pick Lara. Most people would pick Lara.
Well, that's, you know, yet another guy, Lara, who would benefit from inside fighting. From doing more inside fighting, and that's a big issue with his game that I see in the fights that he has lost or come close to losing. You know, especially if you look at like the Molina fight, it's because he wasn't doing enough or wasn't doing enough inside. Yeah, he wasn't doing enough inside. He just covers up on defense a lot of the time and lets the other guy punch. And you know, in that sense, I thought that he was on his way to losing to Angulo. Because that's you can't do that against a fighter like Alfredo Angulo, and that's what he did. But, I mean, I'm not going to call him lucky, but Angulo's eye wound up falling apart, and that's pretty much what won Lara that fight. So, in any event, I'm not saying that he's invulnerable, but I would like to see him in against Canelo. As for the undercard, Leo Santa Cruz, since we're talking about inside fighting and body punches.
Well, who are you picking in the Canelo fight, just out of curiosity?
No, I'm
moving
on.
You going with Canelo on the skill gap?
Bro, I don't want to talk about that anymore. I'm moving on.
All right, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm picking. I think that he's probably just going to outbox Angulo. I don't think that he's going to be able to stop him unless there's some cut or swelling situation, kind of like the Lara fight. So, yeah, I'm picking Canelo. I think that he's rightfully favored and probably should win. Anyway, yeah, Leo Santa Cruz fighting Cristian Mijares. On the undercard of that, I mean, who doesn't love Leo Santa Cruz? Had a bit of a rough outing last time, but Leo Santa Cruz, what's the call, James?
Santa Cruz by TKO, probably. You know, it just seems like he's just, I mean, I think Mijares is a really good boxer, and I'm really interested to see how this fight plays out. You know, I think that you could even argue it's Santa Cruz's best opponent to date, although, like, fuck, I can't think of the guy's name that Mijares just fought, and he just fought Santa Cruz too, right? Mijares lost to him like 6 months ago or so, a year ago. But it was
Victor
kind of
Terrazas.
Yeah, right, okay. Right? Yeah, Terrazas. And he had just beaten Mijares by like a split decision. I think I thought Mijares won that fight, but Mijares, I think this could be interesting, but the fact that, like, you know, Santa Cruz was able to just, like, wear down Terrazas and just walk him right down and eventually stop him makes me think that he'll probably do the same to a guy who fought on pretty close terms, you know, with Terrazas. But, you know, how can you not like Leo Santa Cruz? I mean, he's just really exciting, throws so many punches.
I totally forgot about that fight, so that you actually
reminded me. The Terrazas-Mijares fight?
Yeah, I totally even forgot that had happened. That was, I mean, I was probably going to pick Leo Santa Cruz anyway.
I think we were talking about that.
I totally forgot about that
here one time when it happened.
Yeah, I totally forgot that even happened. Jeez.
When we used to cover fights outside of the HBO and Showtime main events.
Well, that was before we were looking to work for Golden Boy.
Right. But
well,
yeah, I'm
in
just
his
to...
last fight, Leo Santa Cruz, who was it? Cesar Seda. He kind of had a flat performance there. It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't,
didn't he have
like,
some injury deal,
performance,
though?
But yeah, and also on top of that, like, Seda was scrappy as hell. You know, he came to win. You know, Leo Santa Cruz goes to the body like some kind of fucking cannibal. You know, like, the guy's crazy. So, and he obviously looked like, you know, moments into the fight, he was shaking his hand and stuff like that. He looked different. So assuming this is Leo Santa Cruz that we had been seeing, I think that he's probably going to destroy Mijares.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. But I do because I remember when, you know, the Mijares Terrazas fought and then Terrazas got the Santa Cruz fight because I think he won a belt on that. Again, these belts, you know, and that's how that all happened. But Mijares, I did regard as the better fighter of those two, so I think it'll be more of a challenge for Santa Cruz tomorrow night, Saturday night. But, yeah, I think eventually he probably just wears him down. I mean, he's the guy looks like he's so big for that, you know, at bantamweight and at 122, and he just throws so many punches, and he just keeps coming forward. I think it's going to take a really skilled guy to beat him. You know, somebody like Rigondeaux, I mean, I think would right now would be able to handle him pretty easily, but, you know, I think it's going to take that kind of a special guy if you're going to try to outbox Santa Cruz, and we haven't seen any indication that, you know, he's vulnerable in terms of his chin or any, like, he can be stopped. So, yeah, you got to favor Santa Cruz heavily here.
Well, and I mean, Mijares kind of burst onto the scene, as it were, by beating Arce. He outboxed Jorge Arce, like, in, I think, I want to say it was like 2007 or something like that, maybe 2006. In any event, it was a bit ago, and long enough ago for a smaller fighter that, I mean, you would consider Cristian Mijares basically not done or anything like that, but he's obviously older. And so Leo Santa Cruz has a number of advantages on his side, you know, size, youth, output, punching power. Again, he goes to the body like he's just crazy. So, yeah, I think that you definitely got to favor Leo going into this fight. And he wears some absolutely huge earrings sometimes. And that's just pretty.
Mijares does?
What's that?
You said Mijares does?
No, Leo Santa Cruz does.
Oh, fuck. Sorry, dude. I was got some shit going on in the background.
No, no worries. Yeah,
my bad.
It was solid stuff. But anyway, yeah, it was... I would think that you'd probably have to expect Leo Santa Cruz to win, especially being the star, too, assuming it maybe went to a decision or was remotely close. I would have to say that Santa Cruz would probably get it tipped his way, Al Haymon. But, yeah.
yeah. But he's probably my favorite mustachioed fighter.
He does wear that. He does wear that, the crustache. Yeah, he does. That's true. The dustbuster. Yeah, it's that shit's solid, I gotta say. Let's see, what else is... Oh, yeah, your buddy, your best friend, Carlos Molina, is your best
yeah,
friend.
Yeah,
fighting
was
Jamal
the
voided
fighter in boxing.
Yeah, well, aside from Lada.
You're right.
That's what you meant to say. But, yeah, he's fighting one of the twin Charlos on the, I guess, the second undercard fight.
Jamal or Jermeil or
Jermeil, the one who stopped Antoine Smith.
Right.
O-Face Smith.
That's how they'll always be. You know, the one who, you know, the one who beat Rosado. The one who beat...
Yeah.
You name them by a syllable apart, or letter apart, you know, it's fuck.
Yeah, and they look the same now, because one had long hair before, and now they both have short hair. But, I mean, seriously, well, first of all, Antoine Smith, that was a good stoppage. It was a good performance, and also on top of that, Antoine Smith is basically just loud as a bastard, and now hopefully I don't have to really listen to it anymore. And also, Jermeil Charlo fought, I think it was like 6 or 7 times in 2013, and so I do have to give him some credit because he's obviously risen as a fighter in terms of caliber or quality, but still, I mean, Carlos Molina is just a tough, scrappy, ridiculous guy. That's kind of a tough order, I think. So I'm wondering
smack,
why exactly
too.
The
Charlo
this
is...
fight. What's that?
Well, I said Charlo's talking a little smack, too. I saw him. He said that Molina's a stepping stone for him.
Well, I hope he doesn't actually think that, because if he goes into the fight thinking that he's going to walk through him, I think that's a bad idea. Carlos Molina is a long night for many a fighter.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. You know, I mean, I obviously do favor Molina pretty heavily, because I think that he's just... You know, like, I thought Rosado was going to beat the other Charlo brother, and that obviously didn't, you know, that Jermeil really impressed, I think, everybody, because he just completely outboxed Rosado, you know, totally clean. But, you know, Molina, and I'm not saying the two twins are the same guy, but I'm just kind of thinking, like, you know, they're obviously in the same camp. They've kind of been developing along the same progression, you know, and with Carlos Molina, man, is just, like, so tricky and tough, and he could do what he did, you know, against Lara, before Lara kind of got on the scene, against James Kirkland. I didn't think he looked great against Ishe. I was kind of hoping that he would be able to, you know, win that a little bit, you know, more, you know, be a little bit more dominant. But, I just think he's been fighting, you know, he's obviously fought a much higher level of fighter, and he's kind of proven that he belongs in that ranks. And I can't just give Charlo the pass without proving it. So I got to favor, you know, I think you have to favor Molina. I think the expectations should be pretty low because, like you said, I mean, Molina's style is very much, it almost, I would say, is like Hopkins-esque in a way that it's like, you know, not quite the same stuff, but his whole game seems to be to kind of like neutralize what the opponent can do, and then, you know, develop his own offense like from that, and certainly willing to do some kind of, you know, unsavory tactics, especially like holding and clinching, and I, you know, I just can't get out of my mind. I mean, I was so stunned that he was able to just physically, you know, manhandle James Kirkland like that, a guy who was a really strong, big junior middleweight, and Molina was just getting him into a clinch and just walking him, you know, moving him backward, and then, you know, throwing his combinations from there and really frustrating the hell out of him. And, you know, I think that Charlo's obviously a much different type of fighter. He's, you know, a boxer who seems like he has some power and is obviously very quick. So I think it's a good fight. I mean, I think it's a good we'll know exactly where Charlo is depending on, you know, what he can do here. But, you know, I do favor Molina, and I know Molina is exactly like... See, the thing is, like, people don't like Molina the way we like an Orlando Salido because he's not an action fighter. But in terms of, like, earning his place, I mean, Molina was never supposed to be anything special as a pro fighter. And you can tell that from just looking at his resume. I mean, he was an opponent for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., you know, in like Junior's like 20th pro fight or something. And actually, according to a lot of people, should have won that fight, which was ruled a draw. And, you know, he was an opponent for Mike Alvarado when Alvarado was on his way up undefeated. And, you know, has fought, you know, pretty consistently high level of opposition and is only where he is today because he's, you know, exceeded expectations and won the fights he wasn't supposed to. And so even though it's a really ugly, unappealing style, you know, I just respect that he figured out what he had to do to be able to be successful on a high level, and, you know, I do see him continuing that. I think now that he's kind of made it to a more prominent role, he's, you know, featured on these pay-per-views, he's getting, you know, he's like, got that belt. I think Molina's the type of guy who's not going to give that up easily, and it's going to take something pretty special to beat him. So if Charlo can cleanly outbox him the way that his brother did to Rosado, I'll be really, really impressed.
I agree. I mean, I think that in terms of just the styles, just looking at the fight and the way that the two fighters fight and, you know, who has this advantage or who has that advantage, et cetera, it's an interesting fight. I'm just wondering if the gap in experience isn't going to be too much. But, well, there's only one way to find out, you know. So I hope that, if nothing else, I think that Carlos Molina's holding is a tiny bit overblown. He does hold for sure. But he also does work a lot on the inside as well. But I do hope that Charlo is able to bring, you know, the better version of Molina out rather than the one we saw against Ishae Smith, because that was pretty putrid, even if it did mean that, you know, it took the title away from Ishae, and hopefully we see him less on television as a result.
Molina is an impossible fighter to try to – I mean, he's never going to be a fan favorite, you know, because he doesn't have power. He's, you know, very light hitting for the weight compared to some of the other guys that are the, you know, the best fighters in that division. And his style can be very, you know, putrid, just frustrating to watch. And so it's a hard, you know, I mean, I only root for the guy because he's from Chicago. I mean, if he was from Cleveland, I would totally disown him. And I would be picking Charlo.
Twin Charlo. Well, the we got like a little over 10 minutes left. Last fight on that undercard is Jorge Linares versus Nejito Arakawa. So, you know, that's Linares, a lot of people know, Venezuelan fighter, very skilled fighter, seemed like he might have been kind of like a future of boxing type of guy a handful of years ago, suffered a couple losses, has since looked fairly chinny, notably against Antonio DeMarco, where he gassed out and then wound up getting stopped. And then Nejito Arakawa rose to semi-fame, I suppose you could say, against Omar Figueroa Jr. in one of the best fights of 2013. I mean, he obviously was on the bad end, the receiving end of some punishment in that fight. But the bottom line is, I mean, he doesn't hit that hard, but he's one tough, scrappy son of a bitch. I kind of think that at this stage, Linares might have the skills to still win, but he can't really be depended on in terms of durability at this point. But this might be his last shot to really like make it through if it's a difficult fight. So if that's what unfolds, that's a question. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
It could end up just being target practice for Linares, who I think is a little bit, at his best, was more developed than Omar Figueroa was, and also, I think would be able to pretty accurately just beat the crap out of Arakawa for as many rounds as it took. But like you said, we've seen him look very vulnerable. I mean, he got knocked out by Sergio Thompson too, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he got knocked out.
Yeah, Sergio Thompson gave his name, as it were. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And he was stopped on cuts against a fight you mentioned before, too, against DeMarco. Yeah, so, all that, and you know that Arakawa is such a tough guy, and he's going to take punches, and he's probably going to be able to, get in some exchanges. Maybe he can, hurt Linares, and it could turn into an exciting fight. So, I don't know. I mean, you could do a lot worse for the opening on the undercard. But I do think stylistically, Linares is definitely more of a boxer, and has all the kind of physical tools, quick hands, throws a lot of combinations, and I think if he's anywhere close to, what he has left, or what he once was, I should say, Thompson and DeMarco are a higher caliber of fighter than Arakawa, and I think that, even like a 60% version of Linares should be able to pretty easily win the fight. I think the thing with Omar Figueroa is just stylistically. I mean, Figueroa is one of those guys coming up who's just kind of like Santa Cruz, just throws tons of punches. Really tough guy and likes to get in there and brawl and really kind of bully opponents. And against Arakawa, he found a guy who could really stand up to that punishment. He still won like every round of the fight, but it turned into just a crazy back and forth, awesome brawl. And Figueroa took a lot of punches, but I'm not sure if Linares, with his style, is going to kind of expose himself the way that Figueroa did. So I know a lot of people are saying, it could be turned into a great fight and, all that, but I don't know. I could see it kind of being a one-sided fight with Linares pretty easily outboxing him.
For sure. Yeah, but, I tend to agree.
I'm happy to see Arakawa back, though, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. He 100% should be getting this opportunity. Yeah, it's on the bottom end of a pay-per-view, but hey, he's a Japanese fighter who nobody knew about before the Figueroa fight, or at least nobody in the United States. So, yeah, this is an opportunity for him that he definitely deserves. In terms of class, he leaves himself way open a lot. He took a shitload of shots against Figueroa, too. So, I don't have a whole lot of hope for him winning, but regardless, I'm glad to see him get the shot. Let's see, there were a couple more things. I know I'm, cutting everything off and zipping through, but have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to get through a couple more things if we could. First of all, they announced that Carl Froch versus George Groves 2 is going to be taking place at Wembley Arena, which is about 90,000 seats. There's fucking nowhere in the United States and no fight that would really be filling up an arena like that. I mean, maybe Floyd Mayweather versus Pacquiao or something like that, but even then they might even have trouble filling a night. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Point is that rematch is going to be big. It's going to be real big. And on top of that, it looks like it'll probably be a good fight because it's Carl Froch and he's always in good fights. So, yeah, that's a good announcement. What's your feeling on that fight? I know it's a bit away, but...
Well, I favor Froch. I think that... I don't know. I guess I'm probably biased because I was much more familiar with Froch because he's been on kind of the world stage and has fought, the toughest guys in the division. And so, going into the first fight, I mean, I did think Froch was just going to be in a different class. I'd seen Groves a couple times. I remember Groves was like the underdog when he fought DeGale, who was another highly touted British prospect, and Groves won that fight, and that kind of turned him into, the viable contender, but I did think he was going to be kind of out of his depth against Froch, and I was really surprised the way that fight played out, but I just thought that, again, I thought Froch really looked like crap, and then when he finally got it together, I thought he was basically, would have stopped, would have definitively stopped Groves in the late rounds if, the referee hadn't screwed up and stopped it a little bit too early. I thought that Froch was on his way to kind of, proving me right, I guess, or just showing that, in fact, he was the better fighter, whether it's, you know, toughness or whatever it is. I thought he took Groves' best, came back, hurt him, and was on the verge of stopping him, and that would have been the end of the story. So I think that, you know, I expect the rematch will probably be a little bit more one-sided for Frotch, that he'll come in and avoid getting behind early and just impose himself. I think psychologically,
yeah,
such a big advantage to have hurt the other guy in the first fight. And I know Frotch got knocked down and was a bit wobbly, but, you know, the final impression was like Groves was almost out on his feet. And I
yeah.
think that's a huge advantage for Frotch just psychologically going into the, you know, rematch.
Well, we talked about it before, but, I mean, I didn't really think that it was such a huge travesty if Carl Frotch didn't immediately get in with Groves. I thought that he was on his way to winning that fight one way or another, probably by stoppage, if it hadn't been stopped a little early anyway. But regardless, it's just a huge fight. But I agree with you. I think that it was kind of exaggerated a tiny bit as far as what Carl Frotch, like the state that he was in, and then, you know, the stoppage was so early that it makes Carl Frotch and everything he's ever done before this fight a whole piece of shit, you know. There was a whole
yeah.
bunch of responses like that. It was crazy.
Well, it's cool that Groves has so many fans, you know, and that shows you that he is a pretty big, you know, pretty a star in across the pond. But over here, I mean, he was so definitely regarded as kind of like, I mean, just being honest, I mean, I think most of the American boxing fans were kind of looking at that as like almost not a tune-up, but more of like, okay, Frotch is going to have this domestic fight against Groves. He should win that. And then, you know, we can dream about
and then get
these
in with
big
Ward
fights
or something.
Yeah, either like rematch
or
Ward or get in with Golovkin at 68 or Chavez or something like that, you know, because it just mixes it up. I mean, most of, you know, Groves hadn't been on, I think he was on one Showtime undercard, right? You were at that fight. But
yeah.
And then, but other than that, I don't think he'd even been on American TV. So he was, you know, he was known among hardcore boxing fans, but most people saw Frotch as a pretty heavy favorite. I think he was like in betting odds too. It was somewhere like 5-1 or 6-1.
Yeah. And well, it obviously didn't really reflect, you know, accurately, but regardless,
I thought
the end result was right. Yeah. I mean, at the end result was correct, you know, and it would have happened one way or another. I hate to say that, but.
Yeah, and I also don't think he was behind that, like that behind on the scorecards at that point either. It wasn't inconceivable
no.
that he could have actually just even won the decision. It's not like he needed a knockout. I mean, I thought Groves maybe won like, I haven't seen that fight in a while, so I probably shouldn't even, you know, start
yeah, you can't even
numbers
speak on that
out.
Shit if you didn't.
Well, I don't want to say like
look,
how many rounds I thought he won because I don't. Yeah, I don't
yeah,
really.
If you didn't
remember
watch it
exactly.
this morning, but stop, dude.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that Frotch was maybe like a round or two back, and then he'd scored the knockdown, and he was, you know, really hurting him, and, you know, I just
yeah.
thought that whether he knocked him out that round or he just beat him up for the rest of the fight, I thought he was going to win.
No, I agree. That's exactly how I saw it. You know, he obviously had a tough time early, but came back and looked like he was on the verge of doing something big. So, speaking of guys on the verge, Antonio Tarver. Oh, buddy, Antonio
I know,
Tarver.
What the fuck? Why was he taking out markers for that much money? I mean,
well, just in case anybody didn't hear and they're like, what with Antonio Tarver now? Antonio Tarver was arrested for writing bad checks the other day, and I mean, I have to say that's at least better than like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who once got stoned and then got food poisoning from eating bad checks cereal. So at least that's a step up. But this is like kind of on the end of a spiral for Tarver, it seems, because he got booted off the Showtime broadcast team, you know, and then ballooned up to heavyweight despite really not really having a muscular frame to do that. And then some Vegas casino said that he has like a $200,000 debt to them for gambling. I mean, fuck, dude. To paraphrase Latif Coyote there, Tarver, fame fuck he up, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never happy to see, any, you know, read about that happening to anybody, but to be honest, I never really cared for Tarver. So it's too bad because, like, it's one of those, these guys, I mean, you just think these guys have made so much money, and I'm assuming that he's, you know, doesn't just have $200,000 easily available to just hand over to the casino, or otherwise it probably wouldn't have come to this point where he got arrested for not being able to pay the debt back. But it just sucks.
That's crazy shit.
I mean, it's like when you hear about, you know, like Evander Holyfield's money problems, or who I, you know, think is a totally different league as far as like likability and respect than Tarver. But, you know, it's sad to just hear about these former fighters. It's like at one point in time, it was like, oh, okay, you're in for 200 grand. Well, you know, one fight, you know, Tarver probably made millions when he was fighting Roy Jones. But, you know, now he just doesn't have that kind of earning potential. So he's, and like you said, he got fired from his Showtime gig. So he's probably fucked. And, you know, it sucks because I like Tarver as a TV personality. Never really liked him as a fighter.
Yeah. No, for sure. That's kind of how I see him, too. I was never a big fan. But I don't like to hear about former fighters getting, you know, fucked financially.
No, it just,
when that
it just
maybe
sucks.
Might not have – yeah. Well, maybe it wouldn't have happened if there was some type of union or something looking after fighters who lost all their money. I don't know. Maybe it's his fault. But regardless, I don't like to hear about it. Well – we've come to the end of our show, and before we go, we're going to go over time by just a tiny bit, but regardless, before we go, I wanted to say, first of all, happy birthday to Sam Langford, who was born today in 1883, and if you don't know who Sam Langford is, then, I mean, just get the fuck away. What are you doing? Go read a book or something, because Sam Langford is one of the greatest fighters who ever lived, and probably the greatest to never win a title. Regardless, he was born today in 1883. Needless to say, no longer with us. But, yeah, great fighter. It's his birthday today. And the last thing I was going to say was if anyone ever tries to legitimately lick, mix lime and coconut in front of me, it's instantaneous brass knuckles to the sex organ. Seriously, I'm traumatized. Don't do it. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com, and check out my stuff there. And James, yeah.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you once again, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
Check out his stuff. Always a pleasure. His stuff at badlefthook.com. Everybody, thank you very much. Take it easy.